Welcome to the Maintenance Mavericks podcast, where we talk about trends in maintenance, reliability, and asset operations. My name is Ryan. I'm the CEO and founder of Upkeep. For today's guest, I've got someone super special. Super excited to welcome Andrew Black to our podcast. Andrew Black is the Director of Innovation for the Port of Halifax. He also acts as the Executive Director for the Pier, the port's living lab for transportation, supply chain, and logistics. So welcome to the podcast, Andrew. How are you doing today?
Look, I'm doing great, Ryan, and thanks for having me. It's always a good day to be in Halifax, which is where I hail from. So,
all right. Well, I'm super interested in today's discussion. What I always do, though, for all of our guests is kick off the show by asking you how you were first introduced to the industry of maintenance, reliability, operations, and supply chain. What has your journey been like? And you know, maybe more specifically, some of us may be new to this title of the Director of Innovation. Would love for you to share a little bit more about your path to this role. You know, what exactly the head of innovation does at a port?
I've had a bit of a circuitous route to get to where I am today. I mean, if you go back to my undergrad, I studied history with a minor in French, which does not obviously lead itself towards an innovation role. But, you know, after trying a few different jobs for a number of years, the job I had prior to being at the port was with a small consultancy that specialized in the maritime space, especially around ports. And then I joined the Halifax Port Authority about 7 years ago in a role called, initially called Director of Strategic Technology, really looking at sort of novel applications of technology that that could support, you know, supply chain efficiency and transparency. So things like truck tracking, and we launched a port operations center that's still on our website today, and things like that. In the last 2 years in particular, I've really focused more on the innovation side, which is not a huge deviation from where I was. I guess the single biggest departure from that is the fact that we've added this opening of the pier as part of my day job, and so the pier is our living lab, which we'll talk a bit more about in a moment. But you know, we had a new CEO join us in November of 2019, and he really came with a big collaboration, innovation, and sustainability mandate, and so that has really framed my job accordingly. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's awesome. And one of the reasons why, like, I really wanted to have this conversation with you, Andrew, is like, you know, it sounds like your whole role is bringing innovation to, I think, like, oftentimes an industry that is very resistant to a lot of change and a lot of innovation and technology. So I actually think it's amazing that, you know, it sounds like you've created this role for yourself to purely drive innovation, drive change within your organization. One thing you mentioned, Andrew, was this idea of a living lab. Can you share a little bit more about what this means and how it ties back to like this push towards innovation and, you know, driving better change?
Yeah, absolutely. So the pier opened its doors in November of 2021. So we're still pretty new. But the idea was to bring together a mix of operating partners, innovators, researchers, regulators, stakeholders into one place so that we can solve, you know, big problems, complex problems that no one party is going to solve. So take supply chain decarbonization as an example. It gives you a sense of the kinds of problems that we look to solve here. And we exist because the transportation supply chain world is traditional, as you said, and because we are notoriously poor at collaborating. And so we went with the living lab model for innovation over, say, like an incubator, an accelerator. And we did that because living labs typically have shared governance, shared assets, shared problems, and shared projects. And so if a lack of collaboration is your core problem, a living lab model of innovation, you know, has an awful lot to offer. So that's why we decided we're going to turn the Port of Halifax into a place where people innovate.
That's amazing. You know, I'd be personally curious, like, it sounds like you've brought a lot of innovation to this, like, let's call it industry that's a little bit more resistant to change. Are there any examples of innovation at the Port of Halifax that you're particularly proud of? Or maybe anything in development that you're excited by?
Yeah, lots on both sides. You know, I think one of the first project areas that we saw a lot of activity in is around artificial intelligence and machine learning. You mentioned the idea that we're, you know, that I work in a traditional sector, and you're bang on. It's also a traditional sector with a lot of repeatable processes, which is a machine learning practitioner's playground, right? That's that gives them a lot to work with. And so be it through novel uses of machine vision or machine learning and natural language processing to cleanse manifest data or different ways of tracking vessels overseas. AI is doing a lot of heavy lifting today that it wasn't doing yesterday. And it's really, really interesting to see how the industry is changing quite rapidly. Sometimes industries are laggards until they leap ahead, and it feels like the transportation world is in that leap moment right now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, something that we often hear from our customers is this idea of like, yes, we would love to drive all of these cool technologies, but our business is still so far behind. And it's almost like this idea that like, we kind of just got to get the basic foundation before we start taking like leaps and bounds, you know, steps ahead. How do you, I don't know if you've run into that problem, but if you have, like, how do you like manage that where we've got problems today that are just like right in front of you? And then there are these like big moonshot ideas that if we can get one of these things right, it would like change the whole way that the business operates.
Yeah, it's a really good question because the first thing I think people need to remember is that inertia is usually the most powerful force, and that we humans are creatures of comfort, and innovation by its very being is inherently a bit uncomfortable. So a lot of what you run into is just people being people and being set in their routines and wanting things to stay the way they are because that's familiar. Even though the promised land might be a better working environment for them, it's that time in between, that uncertainty that's uncomfortable. Overall, a lot more companies are innovating today than there were 3 years ago. So and part of that's a generational change. Part of that is a workplace culture change, and part of that was no doubt brought on by the pandemic. But it remains a challenge for many organizations. I think there's a few reasons behind that. Innovation can be hard to wrap your head around, right? Like it's not like it has the same direct ROI of like, oh, if I invest this, it's definitely going to reduce my operating costs by 9% on this process, and therefore it's worthwhile, and here's a clear 3-year payback, right? I mean, you don't know that, or if you can get something where you have that tight of an ROI off of innovation, it's probably a very narrow definition of innovation. And not that that's a bad thing, but just to say that really transformative stuff that you were talking about in your question, Ryan, you're not going to get there on that really tight and narrow stuff. But there's also another obstacle that organizations run into is just the need for a shift in mindset. Innovators are a little bit different, and they think differently. And in innovation, you talk about failure often as a good thing, right? If you're not failing, you're probably not pushing the envelope enough. If you explain to most engineers that it's really important that we fail a lot, that's a tough conversation, right? Their whole world is built around processes, structures, and risk management to avoid failures, right? So it is inherently uncomfortable to innovate, but nonetheless extraordinarily important as organizations look to transform.
Yeah. And in an industrials business, who should be accountable, responsible for innovation? Like, it sounds like, you guys, the team over there, it sounds like you created this innovation lab. I think there's two trains of thought. One is like, everyone should be, constantly thinking about ways that they can disrupt themselves, their own process, be better. And then the other way of thinking is like, we need like this hyper focus on doing what you do really well today. And then a separate focus on thinking about what the next 10 years look like, because they are two very different things.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think any time that you can, I don't think that those two things run at a cross purpose. I think ideally what you have is a culture of innovation throughout your organization, and then someone who is, because innovation has a bit of a longer payback, someone whose time horizon is, you know, reaches further out, ideally someone whose title starts with the C, you know, who really owns the outcomes of the innovation file, whether or not they own the innovation itself. They probably won't, right? But like, it's the idea that if you don't have that, you know, senior executive champion for an innovation agenda, then first of all, that resistance that you encounter because people don't like change will be much harder to get through. But second, that you risk having your innovation agenda not as closely tethered to the business's strategic direction. And that's really critical. Even though innovation is a bit murky, it still needs to be tethered to your strategic direction to be valuable.
And how do you measure success of innovation? You know, oftentimes these time horizons you mentioned could be, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20 years out.
One of the really important things that you should do when innovating is answer why you innovate and to develop a framework around that. And part of the reason for that is because it's actually your question on how to measure the value of innovation. It is just inherently a challenging thing to do. A lot of ink has been spilt on this, and I've seen good versions of it. I've seen other, but most of them are don't fully capture it. But you know, for us, you know, one of the reasons that that it's important for the Port of Halifax to innovate is that, you know, in simple terms, we grow by getting vessels coming from Asia via the Suez Canal. We're going to stop in New York anyway to stop and drop off some of their cargo in Halifax and pick up some more, and then head down the Eastern Seaboard, right? And so for us, the business imperative is clear. If we're better, if we're more reliable, if we're more sustainable, if we're a greener gateway that is high performing, then people will choose us. And so for us, there was a very clear business imperative, and it's, you know, that really helps justify the investment.
Yeah. And it sounds like for you, it really started from a top down perspective, saying like, we have to do this for us to be able to win in the long term, be competitive in the long term.
Yeah, look, our CEO is a you know, he's a visionary, Captain Alan Gray is a neat guy, and he came here with a big mindset to innovation, and again, always tethered to our business, but nonetheless, looking out at not just how the port performs, but also how the port works with the city around us, which is a big issue for urban ports, right? You know, people care about quality of life metrics in ways they didn't used to, so they care about green spaces and bike lanes and getting trucks out of their downtown roads and stuff like that. So ports will always keep being, like many of your customers, Ryan, you know, big industrial entities. And so how does a port reconcile itself to an urban world that is increasingly demanding of high quality of life metrics?
Yeah. Do you have any advice for, let's call it, maybe one of our listeners who might be, you know, working in a plant, working in a facility that says, you know, hey, I know that we could improve our process by having remote condition monitoring on our equipment, be able to run RCMs, be able to have, like, you know, really innovative, good technology and tools on our, you know, process, but might also feel like they don't have the upper management buy-in to really drive that forward. Do you have any advice for, you know, someone who might be in that position?
Yeah, first of all, find your champion. And if no such champion exists, then you are going to encounter some challenges, you know, but find your champion, someone that you know, is the path of least resistance on understanding the inherent value of innovation. It's also someone to kind of plot with and to bounce around ideas with and to kind of co-conspire with as you're trying to figure out how you're going to get, you know, the CFO on board or whoever it is, right? But find that champion that's higher up that can help you navigate things. That, you know, if you don't have that, then you're going to struggle from the get-go. And so I think if I was going to start somewhere, it would be there.
Yeah. I mean, it's always a challenge, because, and this is ultimately one of the reasons why I started Upkeep as well, was like, if if you don't have management's buy-in and support, it makes life so much more difficult. But I think the flip side to that, the people with the boots on the ground, closest to the equipment, closest to the supply chain, probably have the best understanding of what the problems are and what solutions are too.
Bang on, right? Like in an ideal world, you democratize innovation so that anyone can have an idea and figure out a way to move forward in your organization. Because you're right, you know, if you're sitting at an executive table, you see things from a certain perspective as an extraordinarily valuable perspective. But if you're seeing the problems firsthand, if it's stuff that you touch on a day-to-day basis, you have different perspective that you don't get from that executive table. So 100%, the more that you can do to democratize the process and to demystify innovation, to not make it a scary thing, and to support your employees in taking reasonable risks. That part is a real tricky one for organizations. People don't like their employees taking big risks, right? And so that is where you get a lot of resistance.
So this is a really good question, like this idea of taking on risks. And I want to like talk about this a little bit more and talk a little bit more about failure too and being okay to fail. So personally, like I feel like innovation is often hindered, not because there's a lack of great ideas out there, but because people are afraid to fail or even start and try. You know, you had mentioned and alluded to this idea that like, you know, oftentimes when you're innovating, oftentimes when you're trying new things, it leads to failure, you know, some of the time. I kind of want to ask you like how you bred that culture of being okay to try, to fail, to innovate, to learn. How are you tackling it? And you know, any advice for our listeners?
Well, look, first of all, you know, it's very much a work in progress for us here. I don't want to pretend that things are all resolved here at our end. But overall, if you aren't failing, you probably have a fairly narrow definition of innovation. And you really do want people, you know, you want people to understand the risks they're taking. You don't want people to fail because of, you know, poor execution of a project. But nonetheless, the idea that you set out a target that is sufficiently ambitious that you might fail, I mean, that's where real innovation happens, right? That's where it gets pretty interesting. So, I mean, in the innovation world, a lot of people celebrate failures as being some of the most important lessons that they learned, not just about business in general, but also about you know, the limits of their product or the potential of their product, right? Is you learn a lot through those failures. Failures are regarded surprisingly highly in the innovation world.
Yeah, so we talked about failure. We talked about celebrating failure, and at the end of the day, it all means like, you know, bringing teams together, democratizing this idea of innovation. And so it sounds like you, the business, the peer, your innovation lab have really done that, like get everyone on the same page towards these shared goals. It sounds like, you know, you're solving these persistent sector challenges, coming together, sharing information, experimenting in new ways to solve bigger and bigger problems. And, you know, for us at Upkeep, we often talk about the same concept about applying these principles of bringing together maintenance, reliability, operations together to have these shared goals. So I kind of want to talk a little bit more about like, you know, this idea of bringing the whole company together to focus on this one goal. Was it difficult? How did you do it? And, you know, for people in our industry wanting to like apply this same principle of bringing different groups together to tackle a shared problem, like, do you have any advice for them?
The peer is not about bringing one organization together as much as bringing many organizations together to wherever possible to focus on common objectives. And so in that respect, you know, we benefit from having some externally imposed common agenda items. So 2030 and 2050 decarbonization targets are good examples of things that, you know, be it the port authority, our terminal operator, land carriers or ocean carriers, we all need to pay attention to those, right? So in that sense, it's a good moment for that kind of cross-organizational collaboration, because we all need to be working together towards those common objectives. Within an organization, usually organizations have, especially the senior people in an organization, have a very clear understanding of the biggest challenges of their business. The biggest departure is to say that is now an innovation challenge, as opposed to, all right, we sat down as a group of executives and we figured out the solution, we're going to go implement this. The idea that, you know, you're going to do a hackathon with a group of university students and see what they come up with, just and expose more people to your industry, or the idea that you're going to, you know, really tap into the talents of your team and really find out what they're capable of in stuff that is outside of their day to day. You know, that is where the gap that happens. It's both a manageable bridge to cross and a bridge that a lot of organizations don't cross.
I personally love that. What I heard, Andrew, is this idea of like bringing different people from different organizations and different departments into one part of the business that might have a, you know, big problem, to tackle the same problem with a different lens. I'm just like brainstorming here, but I'm thinking of like bringing, you know, the operations team in to help bring a different lens to solving some maintenance or reliability problems, or bringing in the safety team to help address and look at the same problems that a reliability manager might have as well. Like that idea of just like cross-pollinating between different departments, I'm guessing breeds such interesting solutions and brings together like very, very innovative ideas versus just staying in our lane, staying in our silos.
Yeah, you've captured things well, right? Like it's, you think about the inherent strengths of a really good IT practitioner, and those are inherently different than the strengths of a very good comms person or PR person, and by bringing a mix of skills and mix of perspectives to the table, then you look at problems differently. At least someone in the room should look at problems differently, right? And that's where interesting discussions happen. If you get in too much of a cadence with your own team, then a lot of the answers you come up with will look the same over time.
All right. Well, Andrew, I've loved all of your insights here, and I'm sure that, you know, all of our listeners have gotten some great nuggets of advice. The way that we always end our show is by ending with a few quick fire questions where, you know, I'll ask a quick question and get your response in 20 seconds or less. You ready to jump in?
Fire away.
All right. So let's jump in. If you could go back and give, you know, let's call it like your early career self advice, one piece of advice, what would that be?
Don't worry too much about what you do in the next 5 or 10 years. As long as you're learning a lot, you'll be fine. And I took a really long and winding route to where I am today. But I learned a lot, often because of work I was doing, you know, outside of my paying job, it was community work and stuff like that. Learn about people and you'll be okay.
All right. I love that. And what about the most important lesson you've learned over your career?
Relationships are everything. So make the most of those relationships. I mean, you know, prioritize people first.
Yeah. I 100% believe that too. What about a common myth about your job, your career, or field of expertise?
A lot of people assume that innovation should be the domain of IT people. I find that to be an odd one, because IT people are generally like a really good CIO is good at managing process and managing risk. And that is inherently at a cross purpose, the kind of creative thinking that you want out of an innovator. I think that overall, people are still trying to figure out where innovation fits within their organization. So they put it with IT.
I totally agree with that, Andrew. It's like, you know, one thing that you mentioned is this idea of democratizing innovation, and this idea that like the people with the boots on the ground are the ones with probably the best solutions to some of the biggest challenges that we may all have in our business. So I don't know, it just seems like an interesting place to drive innovation across everyone in the organization. Andrew, I really appreciate you taking time with me and us to share a little bit more about your insights and also your role over at the port of Halifax. It's been awesome. It's been amazing hearing your experiences and getting the opportunity to learn from you. Just to wrap things up, Andrew, could you share with all of our listeners the different ways that they can connect with you, follow you on your journey?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you can reach out through, if you go to thepurehfx.com, there's an info at email address that if you're looking for me, that will find its way to me. You can also follow the peer on Twitter or LinkedIn, and we'd be certainly very happy to hear from you.
All right. Looking forward to checking that one out, your Twitter following. Thank you again, Andrew, for joining us. Thank you to all of our listeners for tuning in to today's episode of the Maintenance Mavericks podcast. Again, my name is Ryan. I'm your host. I'm the CEO and founder of Upkeep. You can connect with me. I'm pretty active on LinkedIn, or shoot me an email directly at ryan@upkeep.com. I hope everyone enjoyed today's episode, and I look forward to connecting with all of you soon. Until next time, thanks.